The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
A special welcome to anyone visiting us for the first or second time, or for the first time in a long time. If you're not already or not still connected with us, we hope you'll fill out a visitor's card in person or virtually. If you're here, you can get a copy of the card from our greeter. If you're joining us via Zoom, you'll find a link to the card in the chat box. And filling out that card will help keep you informed of programs and activities here at the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I'm Jerry Lazzaro. I chair the worship committee here at the fellowship. This fellowship is a Unitarian Universalist faith community. As such, it doesn't require that you accept the specific litany of beliefs. It doesn't limit you to a prescribed formula for spiritual growth. It doesn't compel you to adopt a particular label for the wonder and awe you experience as a conscious being in a vast, mysterious universe. Instead, we ask that you affirm and promote principles that accumulated wisdom and experience tell us will enhance human development and help create a more peaceful, more just, more verdant world for all creatures, great and small, human and non-human. Today is a special day in our fellowship cycle of worship, the day of our annual ingathering service. The first Sunday after Labor Day is celebrated in many, many Unitarian Universalist congregations as a sort of homecoming. Traditionally, it marked a reassembling of the congregation from wherever its members may have been during the summer months. At times, it marks the first appearance in the pulpit of a newly installed minister. For some of you, this service may signify homecoming, as it could be the first time in 18 months when you're participating in a service in this sanctuary, our spiritual home in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We'll continue to provide opportunity to participate via Zoom, of course, as we began to do at the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. In any case, always and to this very day, ingathering marks a time to celebrate our joining together in body and spirit to re-energize and revitalize ourselves and our faith community as we prepare for a major part of the church year ahead. Now, most of you remember that for many years, our ingathering service featured a gathering of waters. The gathering of waters was a ritual in which members of our faith community poured some water from a place they'd visited during the summer into a communal bowl and spoke briefly on their experience in that place and what it meant to them. You may recall also that in 2019, our former minister, Reverend Larry Piers, added two subjects on which to share comment during gathering of the waters, either a life storm you're currently navigating or a wellspring in your life that nurtures and sustains you. Given our current protocols for ensuring a safer environment for in-person worship, we won't physically gather waters this year. However, we can still reflect on real and figurative dimensions of the water cycle and its replication symbolically in our lives. We can also imagine filling a bowl, a communal bowl, with possibilities we envision for ourselves and for our fellowship in the 2021-22 church year. In that spirit, let's begin with opening words by Reverend Elizabeth Lerner McClay, minister of the First Unitarian Church of Providence, Rhode Island. As drops of rain find each other and build to become a track, a rivulet, a stream, a river, a sea, so are we drawn together. So are we fortunate to find one another. So are we bound together on this shared passage toward an unknown ocean and eternity. And now, In keeping with the theme of this morning's service and our Soul Matters theme for September, Embracing Possibility, we'll light our chalice with words by Reverend Scott Taylor, the founder of Soul Matters. His prayer encourages us to not just recognize possibilities, but to create them as well. May this flame cast its light toward the coming days, reminding us that the future is not simply a place we are going, but a place we are creating. The path of new possibilities will not be found, but made. A new world is waiting to be built. May our time together light the way. And now, as I light the peace lamp, please respond with all the people of the world. May peace be with us. Amen. It's time to sing, or at least listen to singing. Our gathering song this morning is hymn number 145, As Tranquil Streams. This song has special meaning in the context of this morning's in-gathering. First of all, it celebrates the realization of a possibility envisioned for decades, and finally achieved in 1961. The merging of two faith traditions, Unitarianism and Universalism, into one global faith community. Secondly, while we're foregoing the physical ritual of gathering waters, we're not abandoning the image and the symbolism of our faith community as a hallowed space for streams to meet and merge and flow as one to seek the sea. Now, if you're joining us via Zoom this morning, feel free to sing out with gusto. Wake the dog, wake the cat, wake the kids, wake the neighbors. It's fine, right? But if you're here in the sanctuary, please refrain from singing. Mouth the words, or simply focus on them and the longing they express to create a ministry that realizes the enduring and enabling power of love and of truth. The Community Church Virtual Choir sings As Tranquil Streams. The lyrics will stream across the bottom of the screen on your computer or other electronic device, as well as on the one here at the front of the sanctuary. Liberating ministry seeks meaning and truth from many sources, including the Judeo-Christian tradition. And here at the Thomas Paine Fellowship, we often acknowledge and reflect on special days in the worship cycle of many religions, including Judaism. And as you may know, we're currently in the middle of the most important religious observance in Judaism, the period between the Jewish New Year and the Day of Atonement. For those curious minds who want to know, according to the Jewish calendar, we're now in year 5782. The primary themes of these Jewish high holy days are forgiveness and reconciliation. And while we're not observing fully as Jews the high holy days, I've asked our fellowship member and valued friend, Sherry Milkey, to share with us some observations on them. Sherry?
Thank you, Jerry. Hi, everyone. The Jewish High Holy Days are very early this year. In fact, Rosh Hashanah began on sundown on September the 6th, and Yom Kippur begins on sundown on September 15th. All days on the Jewish calendar begin and end at sundown. And the holidays fall on different dates each year because it's determined by the phases of the moon, just like Easter. Rosh Hashanah is very easy to describe, it's simply the Jewish New Year. Yom Kippur is always 10 days later, and it's known as the Day of Atonement. It's the holiest day of the year in the Jewish calendar. These 10 days are known as the Days of Awe. On Yom Kippur, you pray to God, asking for forgiveness for your sins. You typically fast, having no food or drink for 24 hours. Prayers are held in the synagogue 3 times that day. Some people say that's to keep you out of the kitchen. You should reach out to people that you owe an apology to and beg their forgiveness. At the same time, you should be willing to forgive people who have wronged you as a way of letting go of past grudges. It's a way to restore relationships and create healing in the community as well. Another thing you should do is give money to charity. If you can't afford to do that, you can give of your time, such as working in a soup kitchen or volunteering to help the less fortunate in any way. There's also a ritual that people do to purify themselves called tashlich. That means you throw breadcrumbs into the sea or into a body of water, a creek, whatever. And the breadcrumbs represent your sins, which you are casting off. You should do this before the holiday, because the actual day of Yom Kippur is reserved for fasting, praying, and reflection. Holiday candles are lit the night before Yom Kippur. And women typically light the holiday candles. If no woman is available, the head of the household can do it. When the holiday ends at sundown, there's usually a big meal to celebrate. It's called the breakfast, and it's a nice time for family and friends to get together. It's also nice that it's only once a year. There you have it.
Thank you, Sherry, for providing those thoughts on the Jewish High Holy Days. I'll take a chance here. I'd like us to spend a bit more time this morning reflecting on those themes of forgiveness and reconciliation and the possibilities they create for spiritual development and for building community. Since Ingathering Sunday signifies, in a way, a new beginning, it makes sense to consider what we might prefer to leave in the past, like resentments, grievances, grudges, guilt trips. And that's where forgiveness and reconciliation come into play. In his 1952 work, The Irony of American History, theologian Reinhold Niebuhr wrote of the necessity of hope, faith, and love, and why forgiveness and love are inextricably related. Nothing worth doing is completed in our lifetime, Niebuhr wrote. Therefore, we are saved by hope. Nothing true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we are saved by faith. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we are saved by love. And this is the kicker. No virtuous act is quite as virtuous from the standpoint of our friend or foe as from our own. Therefore, we are saved by the final form of love, which is forgiveness. Have you ever said, I'll never forgive so-and-so for that, or I'll never forgive that so-and-so for that? Forgiving does seem impossible at times, even unimaginable. That's as true when it comes to forgiving ourselves as to forgiving others, doesn't it? And let's face it, some acts call for comprehension and compassion that seem to exceed human limits. I needn't remind you, I'm sure, that yesterday was the 20th anniversary of the attack on our country by extremist religious fanatics who intentionally, maliciously, cold-bloodedly, cruelly killed thousands and wounded many more. Do we have it in our hearts to forgive them? That's not a rhetorical question, by the way. That's a very serious question. We know that seemingly impossible acts of forgiveness occur, like the Texas father who visits his son on death row, the son who conspired for personal gain to stage a burglary in which his mother and brother were gunned down and the father seriously injured. Or like the mother in Montana, who showed up at the sentencing hearing for the man who had abducted and killed her 70-year-old daughter. Why? To testify against his execution. And how could you forget what happened roughly 15 years ago next month, in Nickel Mines, PA, less than an hour's drive from here. A disgruntled 32-year-old truck driver carried a childhood grudge, a 9mm semi-automatic pistol, a shotgun, and a rifle into a one-room Amish schoolhouse. He shot 12 young girls. Three died immediately before he committed suicide. Two of the injured girls later died. And I think you remember how the Amish community responded with compassion, not only for the girls and their families, but for the family of the killer. A leader of that community said in a press interview, "I don't think there's anybody here that wants to do anything but forgive. And not only reach out to those who have suffered a loss in that way, but to reach out to the family of the man who committed these acts." Whatever beliefs, experiences, moral imperatives motivate such radical forgiveness, whatever the process to achieve it, we know one thing for sure. Forgiveness is liberating. When we cannot forgive, we cannot move on. We cannot move forward. We're stuck in grievance, grief, resentment, suspicion, disappointment, rage, remorse, et cetera, you fill in. We stunt our own growth and the development of relationships. Now, let's be clear. Forgiving doesn't mean excusing a wrong. It doesn't mean exonerating it. And for we naked apes, it hardly ever entails forgetting the wrong entirely. As Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King once wrote, forgiveness does not mean ignoring what has been done or putting a false face on an evil act. Without focusing on the descriptive definition of forgiveness, Dr. King focused on its function. What it means, he said, is that the act no longer remains a barrier to the relationship. Forgiveness is a catalyst, creating the atmosphere for a fresh start and a new beginning. From that perspective, forgiveness sets in motion the process of renewal and reconciliation, the challenging process of setting things right within us, in our relationships, and in our communities. We UUs are wise to draw inspiration, understanding, and wisdom from the world's religious traditions like Judaism. What better way to begin a new year, to begin anew, than by focusing on forgiveness and reconciliation? Now, granted, both may seem impossible at times, but as with so many human endeavors, they only seem impossible until they're not. Now, I want to invite all of us now to take a few minutes to reflect on someone and something you know would be helpful to forgive. And if you will, let me guide you a little bit in this reflection. Okay, so sit back in your seat and take a deep breath. Try to clear your mind for a moment with a few deep breaths. Maybe even close your eyes. And then summon in your mind's eye an image of the person who offended, insulted, embarrassed, hurt you. You have that person in your mind. Now reconstruct, as well as memory allows, what that person said or did that upset, hurt, angered, frustrated, disappointed you, whatever. Before moving on to the act, let's think, is there something you might have said or done that maybe triggered that behavior? Sometimes it's hard to figure out what in the world, like, what did I do? What did I say? But is there anything you can think of that might have triggered that behavior in your own behavior? And if perhaps your behavior was not entirely desirable, acknowledge that and forgive yourself for it. No one, including yourself, is always at the top of their game or, like Mary Poppins, practically perfect in every way. We're human. Now think of what you know of the person that could provide some insight into why the person behaved that way. Were they stressed out? Going through a rough time? Do you know if they've had experiences that shaped their character and personality in some kind of pricklish ways? Do they live with a physical or mental health issue? Do they suffer from anxiety? Depression? Remember, you're not rationalizing or excusing the behavior, just trying to better understand what might have motivated it. Okay, you've recalled the situation, unpacked it, recognized that it's a universal human experience. And now concentrate on the feeling or feelings you experienced. I mean, if you try to recall that anger or frustration or disappointment. Oof, not pleasant, is it? Not something you want to carry with you for long, or Yahweh forbid, forever. So, decide maybe it's time to let the feelings go. So take a deep breath. Take another deep breath. Hold your breath and those feelings momentarily, and then give them back to the universe. Breathe them out. Now, of course, you can replicate this process again and again, you know. wash, rinse, repeat. And there is a sequel to this cleansing process. It starts by asking yourself if you need or want to preserve a relationship with that person. Is accepting and letting go enough to allow that to happen? Can you let the future kind of shape itself, let it flow? Or could you, or should you, say or do something to reconcile, to help restore the relationship? Now, that's an important question. Do you need to do anything? After all, not every disagreement is a serious conflict. Not every conflict is an existential battle. Not every hill is worth dying on, right? But if you decide some action is called for, think about what you'll do, what you'll say. You don't have to decide that now. You can leave that for later. Now, let me conclude by emphasizing that it's important to forgive yourself. Not excuse, exonerate, justify yourself, but just accept that you do and say things that others may struggle to forgive. And you deserve to be forgiven, as they do. But do consider how you might change your behavior so that you may not need to be forgiven quite as often and are more likely to be forgiven when you need to be. We use water to cleanse and purify. We also engage in rituals to cleanse and purify. We recite and we sing. So let's bring this segment of our in-gathering service to a close with a recitation and sung response that echoes the themes of the Jewish High Holy Days. Lin Li Yang will sing the response to the requests to forgive ourselves and each other, as expressed in our hymn number 1037, We Begin Again in Love. The lyrics will be on the screen behind me and on your screen at home. For remaining silent, when a single voice...
We forgive ourselves and each other, we begin again in love.
For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible,
we forgive ourselves and each other, we begin again in love.
For each time that we have struck out in anger without just cause,
we forgive ourselves and each other, we begin again.
For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others,
we forgive ourselves and each other, we begin again in love.
For the selfishness which sets us apart and alone,
we forgive ourselves and each other, we begin again in love.
For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit,
we forgive ourselves and each other, we begin again in love.
For losing sight of our unity,
we forgive ourselves and each other, we begin again in
for those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
The last part of that song, the last chord, where it goes from the minor key to the major key, kind of, I think, just tells you what this is all about, right? From sadness to greater joy. From cleansing and purifying, let's shift our attention to nurturing and nourishing. Anyone remember from your grade school days, the little ditty and dance to help you remember the water cycle? Precipitation, evaporation, condensation. The water cycle boogie goes up and down. The water cycle boogie goes round and round. Praise for that cycle. Our survival, the survival of all creatures on this planet, depend on the water cycle. We human beings can only survive about 3 days without water. As long as we're hydrated, we could survive without food for weeks. During his hunger strike, Mahatma Gandhi, at age 74, went 21 days with just sips of water. Some political prisoners on hunger strikes have survived without food for a month or more. But without water, 3 days, that's it. Three strikes, you're out. Because of our absolute dependence on water, even our food supply depends on the presence of water, right? And because it's so unique and prominent a feature of our blue planet, water claims a special place in the human psyche. Our thoughts, our utterances are flooded with symbols and metaphors referring to water in its many forms. Rain, snow, floods, clouds, fountains, pools, lakes, waves, seas. And with its many attributes, liquidity, clarity, opaqueness, ebb, flow, surge, seep. Remember the first two lines of this morning's gathering song? As tranquil streams that meet and merge and flow as one to seek the sea. Think of all the other songs we've sung in this sanctuary, like I've got peace like a river in my soul. My life flows on in endless song, above earth's lamentation. I've been sailing all my life now, never harbor or port have I known. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue boat home. Peter Mayer's wonderful song. The point is that many feelings and situations become more meaningful when expressed in terms of something so essential and significant to us as water. In fact, I'd say with confidence that only one other feature of life on this planet packs so much expressive power. Light. Can you think of talking without referring to some image that, you know, is bound to light? Now, with that context in mind, let's imagine where we are in the cycle of our fellowship. Certainly, much has precipitated in the last 18 months to dampen our spirits. The disruption by the global pandemic of worship, programs, and activities here, the loss of so many members of our fellowship. Since March of last year, we lost 9 fellowship members and friends: Joe Snyder, Rob Pickle, Sally Bertolazzi, Gene Holt, Jonathan Black, Jack Hurley, Michael Strauss, Dave Partington, Adele McDaniel. and our minister, Larry Pierce, left to take a position in Delaware. We weren't expecting him to leave this year. Since he left us late in the ministerial search cycle, we'll probably be without a minister in residence for quite some time. Now, we're not reeling from the ravages of storms, heavy rains that wreak havoc on communities, as they recently did all along the Schuylkill River, the Perkiomen Creek, Skipback Creek. Areas not considered floodplains were flooded. People were evacuated. Some were left homeless. I just learned the other night that a local leader of my political party is still living in a hotel room, as his flooded home is uninhabitable. I found yesterday on my feed a news item that a facility in Norristown that distributes clothes free to the needy had its entire inventory destroyed by floodwaters. Now, thankfully, we're not dealing with the physical damage these recent storms caused, but we certainly have had enough rains, as I said, to damage our spirits. And we can learn and grow by watching how other communities pull together to help those seriously affected and begin the process of rebuilding. And we have witnessed, of course, our own fellowship not only practice damage control, but work hard to reimagine itself and fulfill its mission. Members have stepped forward to take on new roles and found new ways to fulfill them. We've created, as well as discovered, ways to continue to meet and worship together. Baby boomers have become senior Zoomers. Did you ever think that day would come? We've refurbished our building and outfitted it with technology to continue to provide remote access to worship and to wedding and memorial services. SK service, right? Even as we cautiously return to holding them on site, we've enrolled 7 new members. We've begun the search for a new minister. Through headaches and heartaches, we've persisted. And we've learned that what seemed impossible to pull off was only impossible until it wasn't. And when I say we, I mean efforts of so many individuals working together to make good things happen. When I think of our tech managers, John Sayre, Mike McNeil, working with board president, past treasurer, Preston Lutweiler, to bring us to the point where we now deliver hybrid services like this one. When I think of the members of the worship committee, committing more time and talent to the worship experience, the work done by Linda Weaver and Preston to refurbish our building. You know, I better stop here because I really fear I'll leave somebody out and have to ask their forgiveness. When I think of the response of our members to the storms we've faced, all I can say is that they embody the slogan adopted by the Ordnance Department of the Army. The difficult, we do immediately. The impossible takes a little longer. And speaking not only of our fellowship, but of ourselves personally, we can't say that all our difficulties and challenges are evaporating like harmless puddles of rainwater in full sunshine. But we can take all we've experienced and condense it into a greater faith in ourselves. Faith that we have the resolve, the resiliency, the ingenuity to embrace possibilities, even in seemingly impossible situations. We can condense what we've learned into sturdier hope that we'll weather storms in the future of any magnitude. And we can condense confusion, frustration, grief, loneliness into greater awareness of just how universal these feelings are, and condense them into a fuller acceptance of just how interdependent we are, how much we need to work in concert with others to nurture and nourish our souls as well as our bodies. We can sense more urgently the need to be more loving and kind while we, the living, still have the opportunity to do so. And loving kindness, as emphasized in today's service, greatly depends on our capacity to be forgiving and to be forgiven. So I want you to ask yourself a few questions. And again, they're not rhetorical questions, folks. They're questions that call for thoughtful, sincere answers. So again, relax, take a deep breath, take another, clear your mind as much as possible of distractions. Now ask yourself, what more could I do to ensure that this fellowship remains a community of open minds and open hearts, always looking to create possibilities, always moving forward in the power of love? Let me repeat that. What more could I do to ensure that this fellowship remains a community of open minds and open hearts, always looking to create possibilities, always moving forward in the power of love? Ask yourself, too, what more could I do to ensure that our fellowship in this time of transition will remain a safe harbor for adventuresome travelers like myself, remain a refuge for those who consider tradition and dogma a launch point, not a port of call, remain a haven on earth where I and others, for a time, can rest in the grace of the world and be free. A haven on earth where I and others, for a time, can rest in the grace of the world and be free. So I'll leave you with those questions and a challenge not only to answer them, but if you can, to act on those answers. Don't you think that if we take all our condensed experience and wisdom and put it to work in the months ahead, we'll see a rainfall of faith, hope, and love, a rainfall that cannot fail to revive us, replenish and nourish our souls. And let's vow not to be deterred by a sense that it's not possible. So often, things are impossible until they're not. We always leave time in our service for those among us experiencing a joy or concern to bring that joy or concern to the light of this faith community, share it with us. After a brief interlude, we'll ask you to share by coming forward to the podium here and speak into that microphone. If you're on Zoom, John Sayre will instruct you after the interlude and after we finish with the joys and concerns here for you to participate. Our interlude, by the way, is very special this morning. It is the Kol Nidre, as composed by Max Bruch, the opening and the opening theme of that piece. The Kol Nidre, of course, is one of the most important prayers sung during the Jewish High Holy Days. Thank you. Our closing words are from the significant figure in Unitarian Universalism, minister and theologian Theodore Parker, who expresses an aspiration for our faith community. Be ours a religion. Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its profession of faith, divine living. And now I'll extinguish this chalice, but not the light of faith, the beacon of hope, the warmth of compassion and love. These we take with us into the world to share with those whose lives we touch and whose lives touch ours. And our closing song this morning is by one of the most famous and beloved UU troubadours, Bill Staines, Reverend Bill Staines. His song echoes the sentiment expressed in our opening words, that our lives flow like a river in a passage toward an unknown ocean and eternity. Enjoy the music, mouth the words, or just focus on them here, if you're here. And if you're at home, let them rip.
I was born in the path of the winter wind. Raised where the mountains are old, their springtime waters came dancing down. I remember the tales they told. Whistling waves of my younger days too quickly have faded on by, but all the memories linger on like the light of the fading sky. River, take me along in your sunshine, sing me a song ever mooning and lightning. Well, I've been to the city, and I've been back again, and I've been moved by some things that I have learned. Met a lot of good people, and I've called friends, felt the change when the seasons turn. I've heard all the songs that the children sing, and I've listened to love for me. I felt my own like the wind. Flow into the open sea. So here.